south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Just to remind everyone, my January 2014 Expat Wisdom Seminar, Off the Tourist Trail, in Central America, is all set up and ready to go. And for those of you who've been asking a little bit more about it, it's half boots on the ground and half lecture. So we'll have morning lectures and every afternoon we'll be hitting the road. And yes, we'll be going to places that I'm sure you've never been before. In fact, I guarantee it. And if you want the complete details, go to expatwisdom.com, click on the Latin seminar link and find out all about it. We're more than half filled now, so be sure to save a spot for yourself because once again, I'm limiting it to 24 people. And for those of you sending me emails asking if it's going to be rugged when we're doing our boots on the ground portions, well, you don't have to wear chaps or bring the Indiana Jones whip. Sure, we'll be walking a bit, but there'll be no jungle or river excursions, no mountain climbing or anything strenuous, and no extended walking more than a couple of blocks at a time. Plus, we'll be in the perpetual spring Altiplano region, about 5 to 6,000 feet in altitude, so you won't break a sweat unless you take a side trip to a Russian steam bath. Yep, and believe it or not, they've got those things down here too. That time of year, it can be cool. High 60s during the day and mid-50s at night. In fact, in January, you might have to wear a sweater or a light coat. So anyway, there'll be no roughing it, so don't worry about that. In fact, on my previous outings, I've had one or two people with canes, a lady with a walker, and at least one guy with a hip replacement. And no one's yet complained. In fact, our friend with the hip replacement decided he's going to come down here and live permanently, and he's here right now. So yes, it is an adventure, but a soft kind of adventure. So anyway, check out the Latin seminar link on the expatwisdom.com website. Now, continuing with my last show's theme, which was hazardous waste and nuclear power plants in Latin America, I mentioned that every single thing Latin American governments do, they do in a substandard, half-assed way. And I'm being kind when I say that. In fact, probably a majority of their road construction projects, especially mega projects like bridges and such, are outright dangerous. That's why so many chicken buses bite the dust. That, along with the fact that they're way overloaded, all the drivers love to drink, they drive way too fast for conditions, and because there's little or no maintenance, the headlights and taillights don't work and the brakes suck. But even if your vehicle's in good condition, you really have to keep your eyes open for man-sized potholes and other defects in the road. For example, they rarely put up guardrails or warnings on the steepest and most dangerous sections. Not to mention, landslides are frequent, and there's no warning of that either, and people pass on blind curves all the time. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, even a brand new Latin American road would never pass a first world inspection. But of course, as you know, everything that the U.S. government does is a model of waste and inefficiency too, but we're concentrating on Latin American governments here. So regarding Latin government projects and their terrible lack of maintenance and oversight, just remember that these are the same people with the same attention to detail that are running and maintaining those nuclear power plants in Brazil, Mexico, and Argentina. Of course, it's not the same people, but Latin government mañana attitude, laxity, and carelessness prevails in all divisions of government. You can count on it. I know. I've seen it. I've stood in a government line for 4 hours just to be told when I finally get to the service window that they ran out of forms or rubber stamps or files or something, and I'll have to come back tomorrow, or what that really means is next week. Down here, when you're dealing with the government, that happens all the time. That's why you'll have your trusty lawyer do all that stuff for you. And actually, he won't do it, but he'll have one or two motorcycle guys on staff called tramitadores that'll stand in those four-hour lines for you. Or the tramitador will pay one of those guys who makes a living standing in line a buck or two to get cuts to the front. And I'm not joking, it's absolutely true. There are hundreds of people in every Latin American city who actually make a living standing in line. But you knew that too, right? Which brings us to the case of nuclear Argentina. Like I began to say in the last show but never finished, Argentina has proudly announced the startup of its third nuclear reactor after they missed their startup timetable by a mere 24 years. You heard me right, 24 years. They've got plans on the drawing board for two more. And with any luck, the way the Argentine government works, they should be done by the next ice age. And really, the only saving grace is that Argentina and Brazil are not in seismic zones. But you've still got those mañana-oriented, incompletely educated Latin Americans running those things. And you know, keeping a nuclear power plant up and running and in good condition is all about the details. Exactly what Latin Americans are not good at. And that's the main problem. No, I take that back. The main problem is nuclear power in general is just not safe. Oh, we can get it right on the drawing board, just like we can with nuclear fusion. But human error and government stupidity will prevail. And for all you naysayers out there who say, oh, you're nuts, Johnny, nuclear power is completely safe. Fukushima's problem was that it was built on a fault line, and Chernobyl, well, that was because it was an idiot Russian design. The Soviets back then had not found oil yet, and they were basically broke, so they cut corners on everything. So with Chernobyl, the Soviets did not construct a double containment vessel, a standard item in nuclear plants elsewhere, though very expensive because it took massive amounts of concrete. That second containment vessel that they didn't construct was supposed to be a fail-safe mechanism if the first containment vessel leaked. I mean, why do you think they call them containment vessels, right? And the first one not only leaked, it cracked wide open. We all know how that turned out. So anyway, if you naysayers are saying, Johnny, you're wrong, safe nuclear power plants can be constructed. Well, to answer that, I'll give you this example. No one knows how to make a legal buck better than an insurance company. They never risk their necks, they only bet on sure things. And there isn't an insurance company in the world that will insure a nuclear power plant. Unless a government like the U.S. government steps in as a co-insurer and a guarantor of last resort. Now, private insurance companies will insure every other kind of power plant, coal, oil, diesel, geothermal, but they won't do nuclear. Not without an ironclad stop-loss government guarantee. What do they know that we don't know? Especially when insurance companies like Lloyd's of London will insure anything, including Fred Astaire's and Betty Grable's legs, the ruby slippers from The Wizard of Oz, meteor strikes, and yes, even alien invasions. And I'm not talking about aliens named Jesus who've invaded your neighborhood who speak Spanish, do gardening, and midnight drywalling either. So anyway, these gigantic multi-billion dollar insurance companies will insure you against the International Space Station falling on your garage and killing your dog, but they won't insure a nuclear power plant. And by the way, in case you were wondering, there are about 450 operating nuclear power plants in the world, generating about 15% of all electrical power. And it's always interesting to note that the country that gets the most power from nuclear energy is France, not the U.S. And get this, France has 51 nuclear reactors. They're the biggest exporter of electrical energy in the world. So is that place a nuclear accident waiting to happen or what? And it's always strange when you hear that little Canada, a country that's always prided itself on being the most eco-friendly and conservationist country in the world, well, they have 17 operating nuclear power plants, all within spitting distance of very populated areas. So, go figure. Which leads us to Brazil with its two functioning nuclear plants, with four more on the drawing board. But guess what? When Fukushima happened, they put those additional reactors on hold for 18 months. Big deal. Whoopee. So, time's up and now they're back in the pipeline again. And the head of the Brazilian Nuclear Power Commission said, in a recent press release, for Brazil, the Fukushima accident doesn't systematically change the basic framework or context in which our country takes decisions about nuclear power. Of course, we will be cautious. We always are. But our plant constructions will go ahead as planned. That make you feel warm and fuzzy inside? So, all you expat wannabes and gonabes out there, there's reason 2,426 not to move to Brazil. Alright, so what about nuclear power in the rest of Latin America? Well, guess what? Little Uruguay, population of a little less than 3.5 million, has always had trouble in the electrical power generation segment of its economy. It cannot produce enough electrical power itself. It has to buy from other countries, which means they have some of the highest electrical rates, not only in Latin America, which are already 3 or 4 times what you pay per kilowatt hour up in the States, but they actually have some of the highest electrical rates in the world. And by the way, Latin American countries generally have a 3 or 4 tier rate system when it comes to electrical power users. Nearly all structured something like this. There's a very low subsidized rate for the poor and lower classes that use 100 kilowatt hours a month or less. And that's half the population of Latin America who live in tin shacks and have maybe a refrigerator, a TV, and two light bulbs going. Most likely they're paying only about 5 cents a kilowatt hour. That means if they're using that 100 kilowatts, they're only paying about $5 a month. Then there's a rate that's 3 or 4 times higher for the average customer like you and me that uses between 100 and 1,000 kilowatt hours per month or so. Then they have a rate for light commercial businesses and yet another rate for large commercial businesses. And because of all those screwed up rates and plans, who do you think gets stuck paying the subsidy for everyone else? Why, it's the average user like you and me. And you know, it is something to complain about, but really there are only two things in Latin America, whether you're on or off the tourist trail, that are higher priced than in the first world. Everything else is much, much cheaper. And those two things are gasoline and electrical power. But if you listen to this show, you knew that already, right? And by the way, don't send me an email saying, what about imports? Everything imported is more expensive. Well, that's only true of imports coming from Europe or the USA, and there's not many of those anymore. The rest of the imports coming from China, Indonesia, and Korea, the usual suspects that are flooding everyone's market, are pretty close to what you guys pay for them up in the States. The exception being cars. And in some Latin countries, cars can be exactly the same price as you pay in the States. Other Latin countries, like, for example, Uruguay, Argentina, Chile, and Brazil, they can be up to twice the price. All because of greedy governments and their taxes. So what else is new? And by the way, you wonder how they can get away with putting 100% tax on a car? That's because their own tax collecting system within each government is, well, run by people who work for the government, who are lazy, inefficient, corrupt slugs. So you gotta love that. Meaning, of course, their tax collection within the country is so ridiculously low that the import taxes are very high. Because that's one of the only ways they can collect large amounts of money at one crack, without all the bureaucratic BS that goes along with collecting taxes at the small business or individual citizen level. Import taxes are collected right at the port as the product comes in. And though all the aduanas or customs departments are totally corrupt, they still collect a ton of import taxes. About less than half of it actually making it to the government coffers after it's been skimmed a dozen times. In fact, to give you an example, one of the ports in Peru was collecting somewhere around $20 million a year over the last couple of years, and suddenly, after a change in administration, the next year it collected only $4 million with the same amount of traffic. So basically, when that new administration came in, something like 80% of those import taxes just disappeared. And don't forget that original figure of $20 million was a figure that was also skimmed way ahead of time, so it was probably $40 million. Who knows? Suffice it to say, everybody in Latin America would love to work in the customs department. Again, it's called the aduana, because that's one sure way to get rich. Or at least get some of the split when it's passed around. In fact, it's been discovered that throughout these ports in Latin America, the aduanas are often run completely by extended family members. Aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters and in-laws are all working at the same place for dozens of years. We're talking about well-connected, in-family, inbred criminal operations. And when there's a job opening, no outsiders are allowed. Kind of sweet, huh? And how do they get away with it? Because so many of these ports and border aduanas are way, way out in the boonies in the hinterlands where no city boys and girls particularly want to live. So you've got these kind of closed shop towns. A lot of them starting out many years ago as backwater hayseed communities that expanded and grew up right alongside the import-export business. And because everybody's either buddies or related, when there's any kind of investigation at all, or hint of one, no one talks. So anyway, the tax collection rates among the citizens and the small businesses is very low and ineffectual. That's why so many of us expats pay little or no taxes when we finally get down here to Latin America. If we're off the books, we pay no taxes, and if we're on the books, they're so much lower than first world taxes in the first place, and in the second place, there are tons of loopholes and a million ways around them. And in the third place, Latin governments are very, very weak at enforcement. Which is why it's been estimated that more than half of the working people in Latin America pay no taxes at all. And why 40% of Latin Americans work completely off the books for cash and no one does a damn thing about it. And you gotta love that too, so why not come on down? Let's see now, before I got on to taxes and the aduana, I was talking about Uruguay. Oh yeah, Uruguay and nuclear power. Anyway, last year, they submitted plans to the International Atomic Energy Commission, stating that they were very interested in having nuclear power plants in the country. Even though, get this, nuclear power is actually banned by law, and two-thirds of their Congress would have to vote to override it. But still, they have their feelers out. Now, the thing is, experts say that Uruguay is just too small a country to even have a nuclear power plant. They just couldn't afford the billions of dollars it takes. The expense would bankrupt the citizenship. But since when did bankruptcy ever stop a government from doing anything it wants? They all spend like drunken sailors. But the difference is, where the U.S. can create money out of thin air with the Federal Reserve and slowly destroy their economy, if you're a third world country, you just go to the IMF or the World Bank and borrow your ass off. That's what they all do, even the big oil producers like Venezuela. Which reminds me, here's something you didn't know about Venezuela. Not only does it have the lowest gas prices in the world, due to massive subsidies and political promises that got guys like Chavez elected, it's got the lowest electrical rates in the world too, at 3 cents a kilowatt hour. For everyone, not just the miserable poor. It's a huge subsidy that costs Venezuela dearly. In fact, because of those subsidies on gas and electric power, Venezuela has massive debt now, and it's escalating by the year, and they're heading into a socioeconomic collision course. So we'll see how that plays out. And you know, the citizens have been used to those subsidies for so long, it would be the kiss of death for any politician or political party to even hint at cutting back. There'd be Molotov cocktails and riots in the streets, believe me. Wait a minute. What am I thinking? They already have Molotov cocktails and riots in the streets in Venezuela. All right, so they'd have more of them. So there are two good reasons to live in Venezuela. It's got the world's lowest gas and electricity prices, even though that's all smoke and mirrors and artificial. Then again, there's about 5,000 very good reasons for you not to be an expat there. Then again, some people love playing long shots. So anyway, my take is realistic. I don't think Uruguay will ever have a nuclear plant, unless Russia or Iran gave one to them. I shouldn't laugh because they just might. In exchange, of course, for mineral rights. Uranium mineral rights. And Uruguay has plenty. And that's, of course, why they're so interested in starting a nuclear program. They've got all the raw materials right there. And, of course, now that marijuana is legal in Uruguay, you can bet if they do open a boring old nuclear facility, the break room will be a very happy place. Which, again, brings us back to the nuclear waste issue. What do you do with tons and tons of those spent fuel rods when Latin governments, who have oversight and are responsible for inspecting and licensing those plants, are lazy, corrupt, and inefficient? And by the way, that's the dark side of all of this. When I started talking about Latin nuclear power plants in the last show, I started by talking about Evo Morales and Bolivia, because the Bolivian government is right now meeting with the French and the Argentine nuclear people, trying to work out some nuclear power plant agreements. And the reason why Morales, the president, doesn't seem to want to back down in any way from his nuclear plans, even after Fukushima, it's because Bolivia too has vast uranium deposits. So all they need is a high-tech processing plant and a few nuclear partners like France and Argentina, and they're in business. And speaking of the dark side of things, did you know that Russia has approached both Uruguay, Bolivia, and Peru and offered, out of the goodness of their little pink hearts, to help set up their future nuclear power programs for peace, of course. And why do you think Russia wants to do that? It's because those three countries have proven high-grade uranium deposits too. And though Russia's got lots of gas and oil, they've got a lot of nuclear power plants and a huge nuclear defense program too, which can't be completely supplied by their own uranium resources. Now, you might think with all these fledgling third-world nuclear programs on the drawing board, after Fukushima, all bets would be off. So, are they? Now, that's a solid maybe. Well, in reality, if you really judge the situation correctly, experts say, in the long run, only Brazil, Argentina, and Mexico, the ones that have nuclear plants already, will be putting new ones online in the next 5 years. So, I wouldn't worry too much about these other Latin American countries and their blabbermouth presidents. Just know it's a fact that these guys are all angling for nuclear power if they can get it. Oh, and just one more thing about that. You know, since Venezuelan's big blabbermouth president, Chavez, died, it's been revealed that he was in pretty heavy negotiations with Russia to put a couple of nuclear power plants in Venezuela, too. And the whole thing was just about to get started when Fukushima happened. And after that, he immediately canceled the whole project. So who knows, maybe Chavez had half a brain after all. Or maybe he just didn't want to have a nuclear cold war with Colombia, who surely would have gotten a tit-for-tat nuclear power program, courtesy of their failed drug war buddies, the good old US of A, just to keep a balance of power in the region. So thank Buddha that never happened. Now, here's something I've recently noticed that's going to surprise you. When I first got down here to Latin America 20-some years ago, I was simply amazed to see the two biggest cultural icons with the young folks in Latin America were, for one, Che Guevara. So well known that he only needs one name, Che, like Madonna or Cher or Popeye. And the other top Latin icon of all time, a face you'd see on t-shirts and walls, posters and billboards practically everywhere, was Bob Marley. And though he's not technically a Latin American, if you ask anyone down here, he's an honorary one. And it's obvious up in the first world, Bob Marley's been a cultural icon forever, too. And why not? He kind of internationalized the style of reggae music, right? The godfather of reggae and spliff. Nothing wrong with that. Completely harmless. But this other thing, that Che Guevara thing, 20-some years ago when I first came down, it was beyond explanation. This guy's mug held a place of honor in practically every Latin kid's home, right alongside the Jesus and Mary statues. Back then, Che was considered practically a revolutionary saint. Though 9 out of 10 people who had his photos in the house or a t-shirt with his mug on it had no idea at all about his history or what he really stood for. It was all about the coolness factor, like having a John Lennon t-shirt back then. So here you got this guy's mug everywhere, in restaurants, hotels, people's houses, on banners, his head immortalized in graffiti, on countless buildings, walls, and murals throughout Latin America. Now, I'd have to agree that most expats that come down to Latin America are pretty well educated. In fact, most of them know more about Che Guevara and his life than any Latin person does. All the average Latins know about their idol Che is what they learned seeing a couple of popularized movies about him. And knowing that the average Latin who had a Che t-shirt was clueless about their idol, to us expats it seemed ridiculous. This guy was everywhere, yet no one bothered to find out what he was all about. Just the thought of that would drive a lot of us expats nuts, since when you ask some guy who had a Che t-shirt on what it was all about, he'd just shrug and say, no say, which means, who knows? And worse yet, when you say to one of these t-shirt-wearing guys that Che was a dyed-in-the-wool socialist, and he wanted to drag down the capitalist system completely, like they did in Cuba, and if Che would have lived and carried his revolution throughout Latin America, you wouldn't have a computer or a cell phone or a flat-screen TV, the internet porno, Disneyland, and 100 kinds of beer, or any of the evils of capitalism that Latins now so fully enjoy. Well, us expats soon found out it was useless to get into a conversation like that, because all you'd get in return was a deer-in-the-headlights look. Now, as for me, soon enough I figured out that all these guys with their Che t-shirts were pretty much brain-dead. In fact, over the years, of all the expats I've known, none of them, I mean none of them, would be caught dead with one of those t-shirts ourselves. Anyway, when I first got down here, the Latin world needed another Che t-shirt like Kim Kardashian needed another ass implant. So back then, anyway, everywhere you go, there were Che t-shirts, school notebooks with his face on the cover, badges, Che faces etched in graffiti all over the place, people dressing up like Che on Halloween. And then came the Che movies from Hollywood, those Benicio del Toro movies that nobody up north saw, but when they got dubbed in Spanish and shipped down, Latins down here just ate it up, but they still didn't put the capitalism-socialism thing together. Then there was that Hollywood movie, The Motorcycle Diaries, which supposedly depicted the life of young Che, long before the facial hair, the army camo clothes, the poor hygiene, and the infrequent bathing. Now that movie didn't make any money up in the States either, but down here, it cleaned up. And that's how local Latins learned about their hero Che. And worse yet, there are also a ton of bad Che movies in Spanish that you should be glad you never saw. Oh, and by the way, when I first got down here, it was not unusual to flick on the TV and see soap operas and bad comedy shows and TV series with Che-like characters and revolutionary Che-like figures popping up all the time. In fact, one expat marketing guy down here told me that the Che image is one of the top 10 iconic marketing brands of all time. He's right up there with Elvis, Bob Marley, the Beatles, Mickey Mouse, James Dean, Charlie Chaplin, Marilyn Monroe, Santa Claus, Superman, and Batman. In fact, you know, old Che's got to be turning over in his grave. Because, you know, ironically, He contributed massively to the consumer culture that he hated and despised. And it's everybody else making the t-shirts, hats, posters, tattoos, and bikinis that are making the dough off his image. And you know, 10 or 20 years ago, he was the ultimate symbol of rebellion and Latin counterculture. But what kind of rebellion or counterculture? 9 out of 10 Latins wearing that stuff just couldn't tell you. Was it the coolness factor? What else? But you know what else was even cooler than a Che t-shirt? Now, this will sound strange, but it's absolutely true. All a Latin teenager, adolescent, or adult needed to push their Che t-shirt to the back of the bus was any item of clothing that came from the first world with English lettering on it. And anything having to do with Disneyland topped the list. That's why when you're down here in Latin America, you'll occasionally do a double take when you see a kid on the street wearing a t-shirt or a hoodie that says Joe's Cozy Corner Tap Cleveland on it. Now, to a young Latin kid, that's a prized possession. It's got a very high coolness factor to the locals, even though the guy wearing it has absolutely no idea what the words mean in English. The gringo advantage strikes again. That's why Mickey Mouse, Goofy, and Donald Duck fashion wear trump a scruffy old Che t-shirt any day. Even though Disneyland paraphernalia is passé with American adults, we wouldn't be caught dead in a Donald Duck t-shirt. Up north, that's purely kid stuff. Totally kitsch and passé for us adults. But you know, back then, 15 or 20 years ago, Disneyland stuff was rare and very hard to come by down here too, which of course made it all the more desirable. Not for us gringos, but for the Latins, of course. So, back then a Che t-shirt would go for like $2 or $3, and a Mickey Mouse job? Well, just try to find one. Oh, and I gotta tell ya, one Halloween, Expat Eddie went as Mickey Mouse wearing a Che t-shirt. And nobody got the joke but me. Yeah, we had conversations about it, but no one got it. Can't win them all, you know? So anyway, 15 or 20 years ago, there'd be so many young kids running around thinking they're cool with all this Che paraphernalia. Sometimes you'd just want to slap them and say, do you even know who this guy is? But I tell you, things have really changed in Latin America. These days, Bob Marley is still the exalted reggae symbol he always was. And that's cool, but funny enough, you almost never see any Che stuff anymore. Except, and this is a big exception, in Cuba, of course, where he's a hero and practically a saint. In fact, the grade school kids even chant songs about him in school as part of their morning lessons. Get that. Well, I'm at the end of the show again, so I'll pick up with this next week. Stay tuned.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.